Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a podcast where three booksellers from Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, New Hampshire chat about all things literary. My name is Ryan.
I'm Hillary.
And I'm Kelso.
So later on in this episode, you'll be hearing a special interview I did with Aaron Bowman and A.C. Goggin about their recent novels, Immunity and Imprison the Sky. But before we get to that, let's talk about our current reads and books we're excited about. Who wants to start?
I'll go.
Okay.
I have two books that I have read recently that are just about to come out. And the exciting thing about them is both of the authors are going to be here. The first is Chances Are by Richard Russo. He will be at Gibson's Bookstore on August 27th. Chances Are is, I'm a 60-year-old woman, so this book is just, it's for people like me. It's about three men who are in their mid-60s who meet up together. They have been college buddies. And they meet up on Martha's Vineyard for a little reunion after many years apart. And they're all a little bit obsessed with a young woman that they were all in love with, who visited the island with them right after graduation, college graduation, and who disappeared. And so it's sort of a mystery.
Oh, my God.
But it's also about getting older and looking back at your life and your regrets and the things that make you happy and the things you wish you could change, the things that are ineffable that you cannot change. It's a pretty lovely book, and I enjoyed it very much. And Richard Russo is one of the nicest people in the world. He's a wonderful reader, wonderful presenter, so yay, Richard, for churning out another great book.
Yay.
The other person I'm really excited about is Emma Donoghue is going to be here on Thursday, September 19th at 6 p.m. Emma Donoghue, you may remember from her book Room, which was a bestseller and was made into a movie. But before she wrote that book, she was known as a writer of historical fiction. And this one sort of harkens back a little bit more to that. It's called Akin, and though it does take place now, it is about a man who's just about to turn 80 who wants to return to his place of birth, which is Nice, which he left when he was 4 years old during the war. And he's trying to figure out what his mother was doing during the war. She remained behind, and he's not sure whether or not she was a collaborator, was she a member of the resistance, or what. And just before he's about to leave, he receives a phone call from a social worker saying, you are the only relative who can take in a 10-year-old child whose mother's in prison and whose father has died. And his father is the main character's ne'er-do-well nephew who has died of a drug overdose.
Wow.
So all of a sudden, this very erudite, childless 79-year-old widower is left with a foul-mouthed, unhappy, angry child from Brooklyn.
Oh my God.
And he takes him to Nice and they go on this adventure. It's kind of like a buddy movie kind of book, you know. It's two people who are actually more alike than you would think possible. And it's lovely, it's funny, it has lots of history in it about the war. I'd recommend it to anybody who wants something a little bit lighter, but with also some very serious issues in it.
That's awesome. I've been meaning to listen to that because I love Emma Donoghue and I have that on Libre FM. I want to listen to it before
Yeah, it's
her
really
event.
Worth listening to.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then the very last thing I want to talk about is this beautiful book, Underland, by Robert McFarlane. McFarlane is a magnificent writer of nonfiction. He writes about landscape a lot, and this one is about going underground. And it is just a remarkable book about all the places we do not know about. I'm just going to read this little tiny bit at the very beginning. Near the ash's base, its trunk splits into a rough rift, just wide enough that a person might slip into the tree's hollow heart and there drop into the dark space that opens below. The rift's edges are smoothed to a shine by those who have gone this way before, passing through the old ash to enter the underland. Beneath the ash tree, a labyrinth unfurls. And I do think there's an allusion there to Wonderland and Alice in Wonderland.
Yes.
But he does things like he spends a week in the catacombs under Paris. He goes to burial chambers. He goes caving in these impossible spaces. He goes and sees underground rivers. It is remarkable and just beautifully written, and I highly recommend it to anybody who loves books about landscape. I'm claustrophobic. It is really terrifying. But I'm just loving it.
Awesome.
So that's me.
The first book I have is called The Book of X by Sarah Rose Etter from $2 Radio. Sarah Rose is one of my friends, and she wrote this book. It's her second book, and she did a remarkable job. The story follows Cassie, a young woman who's born with a literal knot in her stomach. Not like a metaphoric, like a literal, her stomach
intestines are
twisted.
The whole body, like you can see it.
Oh my God.
And it's genetically passed down maternally, so from her mother. Her mother also has it, and her grandmother has it. Oh, wow. Nobody knows why or how this has happened to just her family. Follow her throughout her childhood and how rough it is to be a woman living with this literal knot in your stomach and being a freak. And, it's this giant metaphor about body image when we get older, you know, how as women we have to go through this very misogynistic world and people like wanting to see different aspects of you. And my favorite part about this book is that she's living in her regular boring world, and the only thing that's surreal about it is the knot in her stomach.
Sure.
And how she kind of, like, goes through her childhood and her teenage years. But she also, like, puts a surrealist spin on stuff. So her family has a meat quarry, but, like, an actual quarry like you would, you know, blast rock out of. Instead, they, like, pull down hunks of meat out of this quarry.
Oh, weird.
So there are these, like, strange parts of it, so it kind of blurs this line between like what is in her imagination and what is real. It's fascinating. Roxane Gay gave it a really good review, so that's my first one.
That's awesome.
My second sad girl book is called In the Dream House, which is a memoir by Carmen Maria Mercado. This is a true account of Carmen's relationship with her lesbian partner, and her lesbian partner was very abusive to her. So this is her talking about this and hashing out, you know, how she got into this abusive relationship and how she survived it. My favorite part about this book is every chapter is written in its own narrative trope.
That's really cool.
Yeah,
so like just each chapter is like a different genre, a different writing style. Oh,
so
that's really cool.
The last one I just read was this portion of her relationship as a stoner comedy where like her girlfriend at the time gets high before meeting her parents for the first time. She's really upset about it. So she goes through that. She also talks about parts of her life growing up. And she also talks a lot about queer relationships and how it's not very often discussed about the abuse that some queer relationships do have. And I feel like that's really important to discuss, especially in today's society. And if you guys did not know, Carmen Maria Mercado wrote Her Body and Other Parties.
That's one of my favorite short stories of all time. The one about all the CSI plots.
Yes.
It's hilarious and weird and creepy all at the same
time.
Oh, awesome.
So that's her.
That's
cool.
I didn't realize that was her.
This is the book that she wrote. She's writing a memoir. It's coming out November 5th. It's fantastic. It's pretty short, but if you loved Her Body and Other Parties, which won, like,
It was up for so many awards.
Yeah.
That is awesome. I gotta read that.
And the third one, which is really light, is called Fix Her Up by Tessa Bailey. I am listening to this on Levo FM.
Yep, I just finished it.
Ryan finished it, said that she loved it. We have another coworker, Elizabeth, who you've heard before on this podcast. She absolutely loves it. They have both convinced me to read it, so I bought it on Levo. And it's a romantic comedy about this girl whose family runs a home renovation business out in Long Island. And she's always had a crush on her older brother's best friend. His name's Travis. He graduates from high school, goes into the Major League Baseball, gets injured, comes back home, starts flipping houses for the main character, Georgette's family, and tries to, like, fend off all of the girls who are trying to ask him out on a date in this small town. And he's trying to get over, you know, being super upset because he, you know,
when it's like dreams were crushed.
Right. So, and then Georgie, the female main character of the story, decides, hey, I know a great way to get these ladies off your back is you pretend to be my boyfriend. And so the whole town starts talking and they start falling in love.
Mm-hmm.
They also have a lot of sex in the book.
It's a steamy book.
It's very steamy. But you know what? It's well-written steamy book. It's very well-written. It's
not cringy.
Right. It's
just a good romance.
Yeah. And well, it's sweet.
There's a lot of good new romance writing out there.
Yes.
And it always includes sex. And we're actually talking about putting in a romance section in the store.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Because this is such a popular genre.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so this, yeah.
We're branching out a little bit.
Out here, getting into it.
We're trying to figure it out. It's very well written. It's cute. And I didn't think I was going to like it. And I do. It's super good. Get it on Libro FM and put some headphones on.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I really liked that one, and Elizabeth also really liked that one. And it's just, it's, like, funny at times, because Georgie is a professional clown, and, like, so she's literally, like, the clown of her family, so her whole family is working at this, you know, they own their own business, and they're flipping houses and doing all this stuff, and she's off, like, being a clown at birthday parties, and so she's, like, so she gets something out of the relationship, too. Travis is, like, oh, I'll pretend to date you and then people will leave me alone, and she's like, I'll pretend to date you and my family will see me as an adult grown human. And then of course, yeah, they fall in love and it's very cute, and I think it's going to be a series. I think it's the first in a series, we'll see. And the narrator is really, really good.
Oh yeah,
on Libro FM. Mm-hmm. She does a really good job, so cool. Alright, so yeah, so I just finished that one. I am currently reading a book by Jeanette Winterson called Frankenstein. So that's Frankisstein. It is a modern retelling of Frankenstein, and it's split between Mary Shelley in the 1800s writing Frankenstein and being inspired and, you know, kind of meeting her monster, and modern day sort of slight future Brexit Britain, where there is a Dr. Rye Shelley, who is a trans person who is falling in love with a man named Victor Stein, who is a brilliant, disturbing AI scientist engineer. And he specifically is working with, like, humanoid robots, and so he in his own right is Victor Frankenstein creating the monster, and then you've got Mary Shelley creating Frankenstein. It is fascinating, it's fun, it's, again, talking about steamy books, this is another kind of steamy book, but also has that aspect of Frankenstein where it's, like, creepy, it's dark. You don't necessarily know if you can trust certain people you want to, but you're like, oh, I don't know, you're basically Victor Frankenstein, I don't know if I can trust you. It's really, really good.
When is it coming out?
It comes out this October.
It's long listed for the Booker.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. It deservedly so. Really brilliantly written. When you are reading the Mary Shelley in the 1800s section, it's like you're reading Frankenstein. It has that style of writing from the 1800s where you're just transported there, but then you flip to sort of modern day England and it's very modern days, like slightly futuristic. And so but it's not jarring, like it works really well. And so you can always tell, like, because sometimes it's chapters that are one perspective or the other, and sometimes it'll split perspectives within a chapter, but you can always tell what you're reading because of the style of the writing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really, like, seamlessly done, and I'm really, really enjoying it a lot. And then there are a couple of advanced reader copies that I'm excited for. I grabbed Permanent Record by Mary H.K. Choi.
She wrote Emergency Contact, which is a very, very sweet YA romance. People who like Rainbow Rowell and John Green, like, it's that type of just very sweet teenagers falling in love. Very cute. And so this is her next one. It's a standalone. It's not a sequel. So I'm excited for that one. And then I also picked up Wanderers by Chuck Wendig, which is out now. I have the arc of it, but it is out now. And that one, every single person who reads it is like, this book is amazing. I couldn't put it down. So I'm really excited to start that one. Today, I am so thrilled to be talking with two incredible YA authors, Erin Bowman and A.C. Goggin. Both Erin Bowman and A.C. Goggin, whose first name is Annie, have new books out. Immunity is the second in Erin's Contagion duology, and Imprison the Sky is the second in Annie's Elemente series. We just had a fantastic event with them, and they're so kind to be sitting down to chat with me here today. Hi, Erin. Hi, Annie. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, great.
So I want to start by talking about Contagion and Elemente, and honestly, I could talk about these books all day long, but I want to start by having you guys summarize your books for our listeners who haven't read them yet. So, Erin, let's start with you. Can you briefly summarize the Contagion duology?
Sure. So Contagion follows these two teens who are working part-time jobs at a research facility when a distress call comes in from a mining crew at a distant, desolate planet, and they sort of end up swept up in this rescue mission that they are in no way qualified for. And in true sci-fi horror fashion, things go wrong very quickly, and it is a, I think, scary, intense, sort of thrilling survival tale, and then Immunity is the conclusion of it. It's a duology.
And Annie, how would you describe your Elemente series?
So the Elemente series starts with Rain the Earth, which is about a girl named Shalia who is trying to broker peace between her nation and the bordering nation. And she does this by entering into an arranged marriage. When she marries this guy, she finds out that she has the ability to manipulate the earth, so she can move mountains, quite literally. And as soon as she gets to her new country, she finds out that these powers are not only outlawed, but they're considered high treason, and her husband in particular has a really intense fear of these powers. And she really has to figure out how she can still maintain this peace and yet also fight for herself and fight for other people like her. The second book, Imprison the Sky, shifts narrators. So it's a person we see very briefly in book one who is a flying airship pirate captain who is an incredibly morally gray character who has to make a lot of very tough decisions for both herself and her crew while she's searching for her family that she's lost touch with.
Mm. Awesome. Okay, so I want to talk about the women in your books because you both wrote a lot of really amazing, strong female characters, but they're very human. Like, they're very relatable in a way that I think doesn't always happen in sci-fi or fantasy. In Contagion, you've got very sort of flawed characters who are also very strong and badass and very cool. So you've got, like, you know, this scientist doctor who is brilliant but has a lot of secrets mm-hmm. that she maybe shouldn't have kept secret. And then you've got, you know, this captain who got to her position probably only because of her family and she's not super qualified. And she makes a lot of decisions that maybe are the wrong decisions, but,
definitely.
Like, she's trying. She's yep. not malicious in any way. And, like, you know, I definitely, reading it, was like, yeah, no, I probably would have made the same decision if I was in that position. And same in Rain the Earth. You've got Shalia and Kata, and these are women who are very strong. But what I love about Shalia is that she's so kind and at times very, very vulnerable while also being very strong and very, very smart. And so she finds these shreds of humanity in this really terrible person and she appeals to those to get what she wants. So she's manipulating him but with kindness and like she really does, it seems, she wants to love him. She wants to have the marriage that, you know, the women in her family talk about. And so I found that really made her so human. So I just really, really loved your female characters, and I wondered if you guys wanted to talk a little bit more about the ladies in your books and how you created them.
Well, I think I'll just start by saying I think the term strong female character gets thrown out a lot right now, mm-hmm. and there was a point a couple years ago, and it still happens, but where I think all the books coming out had strong in the traditional sense, and it was often strong in how we think of a masculine figure of like, well, this girl has to literally kick butt and know sure. how to yeah. wield a weapon and be a leader and all of these characteristics that we associate with a male leader or a male hero. And I think there's been a shift where more and more now we're using strong as just saying a girl who has agency, mm-hmm. and that there are also many different types of strong. So Thea is not someone, she's one of the main characters in Contagion. She's not someone that is that masculine stereotype of strong. She can't wield a weapon. She can't physically kick butt, but she's super smart. And she's also at the start of the novel, she's an intern, yeah. and she's gotten to where she is in life by being a good student, studying hard, following rules, taking basically orders from her superiors and following them. And so in Contagion, I think of her as so strong in not the traditional sense. She learns when to push back, when to question her superiors, when to start fighting back in a different way. And so I think I have also written strong female characters, I'm doing air quotes right now, that do kick butt and wield weapons. You talk about they feel relatable. I just wrote them like they're all real people. Yep. They all yeah. have their own flaws. They all have their own strengths. And it's really just about making sure everyone has agency and is making decisions for themselves that felt right within the narrative and logical to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're so right in sort of calling out the danger of the strong female character idea, because I think that as soon as we start saying, like, oh, this character is strong, it opens up the possibility that others aren't.
Yeah.
And I think if there's one thing I know about, you know, women in particular, I have never met someone who's not incredibly strong in her own way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that way varies. And I think that was, for me, the hardest thing about writing the Scarlet Trilogy, which is my first series, because it follows one character throughout the whole series of books, and it's a character who defines strength in a very physical way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's running through trees, she's throwing knives, she's all grumpy faced and stab you.
And stab you. I like that adjective.
And it really wasn't a complete picture. And I think people love to have me be a spokesperson for, like, oh, the strong female character. And I was like, God, that's so limiting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one of the things that I really wanted to do with the Elemente series was look at very different pictures of what it means to be strong. And I think Shali is a great character for that, because she is almost a radical believer in peace.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a weird statement to make, but it's like, you know, she believes so hard in these things that could be transformative, and she gives up a very big piece of herself to try and achieve peace for her people, for other people like her. And she's really willing to do so much to achieve this goal. And I think she is very focused in that. And that does make her very different from a lot of the ways that we see people taking action. And I think, actually, as a writer, it was very hard to make her seem like a person of action. I think, especially in YA, that was something I was continually fighting against. It's a lot easier with Aspasia, who's like, I'm the captain, and I'm flying the ship, and I'll tell you what to do. I use very active verbs and such. But I think having both of those characters and more besides, you know, being able to show all of these different pictures of strength, I think that's really what, you know, what it means to be talking about.
Yeah. No, women in fiction. I loved it, and I loved them. They're awesome characters. Annie, I want to talk a little bit about the system of magic in the Elemente series. What is it like to create a system of magic? Like, did you have to create all the new rules? Where did you pull from?
I think one of the... God, this is so nerdy. But one of the big places that I pulled from was Aristotle.
Nice.
Aristotle has, like, a lot of ideas about, like, how to sort the elements and what's next to each other and, you know, what's warm and cold and hot and wet and all these sort of different things. And I liked the idea of how magic is positioned against each other, like these elements could touch. So, like, Shalia's brother, Kairos, in the book you find out that he has one of these sort of tangential magical abilities.
Yeah.
And that's because it is on the border of two different elements.
Yeah.
So there's all these sort of, like, shard powers, if you want. But it was really interesting trying to then decide what these people could do, because Have you ever seen the movie Sky High?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, when whichever Panabaker sister it was, Danielle, she can, like, maybe Danielle, can control, like, plants and stuff like that. And she's walking down a hallway and she's, like, about to take somebody out. And she's, like, like, throwing her hands up and all these plants start flying out. And I was like, that's going to be earth power. And my writers group, I work with a couple of amazing writers, and one of them is Katie Slavensky, who writes middle grade, and mostly science-based middle grade. And she was like, so, you're dealing with Earth. I mean, I know this is magic, but, you know, really, technically, she would have to be controlling, like, a water source and a heating element, and there's really not going to be plants there unless, like, she can control all those other things as well. And I was like, she can't grow things. And she was like, she could, you just have to rewrite the magic system. And I was like, well, if I'm just saying she can control Earth, what are we talking here? And she's like, well, you know, like rock and metal and ore. And I was like, I can work with that, actually. Mm-hmm. I can definitely. Mm-hmm. And similarly with the second book, you know, Aspasia's, she's been really good at her power for a really long time. And she has the ability to not only control the air, but to actually pull air up and down so that she can manipulate storms. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that my friend was pointing out is anytime she's doing this, it's actually going to create an offset, right? She pulls the air out of something, something else replaces it. So mm-hmm. whether that's the atmosphere or a room or whatever, that there is a scientific basis still for how this is going to work. So she's like, if you're manipulating the air here, in like 24 hours, a storm is coming behind it, right? Mm. So you're, and I was like, I can also work with that. So I guess the real trick to having a cool magic system is have good critique partners.
Yeah. But... that might be the trick to all writing.
Yes. Yes.
There's always.
Have a science person in your corner.
I don't know, just, we get so close to our own stories and our own work that we sometimes can't see very obvious flaws.
Totally.
Very obvious plot holes, and sometimes it's a more subtle one, too. And that's why I think critique is always so, so helpful for fleshing out your worlds and catching things that don't make sense. And
I think, you know, outside of this podcast, we were having a discussion about laziness versus efficiency. And I think oftentimes I find myself gravitating towards that in writing, where I'm just like, nobody will notice or care about this, and that's fine. And then writers group is a really great way for them to be like, we care.
Yeah. And your readers will too. Yeah. And so let's back
and
up.
And so will your editor.
And so will your editor, right. So let's figure it out now, yes. And then that's less work for you later. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, Erin, so Contagion, genuinely scary. And this is coming from someone who I watched 31 horror movies every October just for fun.
Every night.
And I do the actual scary ones. My husband's always trying to get me to watch, like, Wallace and Gromit. No. Like, give me The Exorcist.
The Twitches.
yeah. So I just really, really loved Contagion because there's something about, like, all the different pieces that came together to make it really scary. So you've got space on its own.
Terrifying.
Yeah. Right?
Agreed.
Like, abandoned planet. Scary. Potentially no escape. Terrifying. And then you add a Contagion that, all right, we're getting zombies in space. It's absolutely horrifying. And you add in, like, you have really, really good pacing. It moves really quickly. It all happens very quickly. Did you scare yourself at all while writing Contagion?
Not really. I mean, I got kind of the creeps sometimes, being like, oh, this is kind of creepy. But I always knew what was happening as the writer, and I had planned it out. So the jump scares that terrify me in movies, and the music that exists in movies that kind of cues you into something really bad is about to happen, I didn't have that. Mm-hmm. I don't mind scary movies. I don't like slasher flicks. But I do really like The Alien and Aliens. Those two movies are some of my favorites, and they heavily inspired this book. And so, I mean, knowing what was coming, it wasn't scary, but I knew how I wanted to reveal things to scare everyone else, and I pulled from all of the things that I have found creepy in media that I've consumed. So one of the things that I loved while writing this book was developing the planet that they go to, Aklis. It is, in my opinion, almost a character of itself. It's a villain of itself in many ways. And so just the atmosphere that they're dealing with adds to the scary factor, and the fact that you don't really know what is wrong when they arrive there, the fact that characters are keeping secrets. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I mean, one of my biggest fears is disease and outbreaks. Like, it's a terrifying villain to me because it will not discriminate. Yeah. It can pass and spread quickly. And if we don't have a cure for it or even know what it is, how do we fight it? that's all in Contagion, and I had to figure out all of those details before I started writing it, so I wasn't scared. I could see where things might be creepy and where other people might get scared, but I don't know, we get so close to our books that, like, sometimes by the end I'm like, is this even good anymore? I have no idea. So I was pleasantly...
There's nothing in this that's scary at all.
That's honestly how I felt by, like, when I was done with it and sending it off into the world. So I was very happy when reviews started coming in and people were like, I had to read this with the lights on. I couldn't read it at night. I was like, yes, mission accomplished.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Terrifying children one day at a time.
That's the goal. So... each of your series has been a different genre. We've got the Taken trilogy is dystopian, Vengeance Road is Western, Contagion duology is the sci-fi horror thriller, and you've done the fractured fairy tale, you've done the fantasy. So do you guys pick a genre before you start writing, or do you have sort of a seed of idea that you follow? How does that work for you?
The second. I need the idea first. And for me, often my ideas end up leading me to a new genre because I'm tired of working on the other one. Mm-hmm. We talked about this a little bit in our event just earlier. For me, I've always written a couple books in this. Like, so my debut was a dystopia and it was part of a trilogy. So after three books in, I was like, I don't want to write anything that's sci-fi in any way or futuristic in any way. And I'd always wanted to write a Western, and I got the seed of an idea for that story, and so then I jumped into Westerns. And then two books in, I was like, oh, I'm so sick of writing within a historical context. I don't want to fit things into a timeline that actually happened. I'm tired of fact-checking when a word was used and came into usage. I'm going to write sci-fi. So, like, I mean, but it wasn't like I'm going to write sci-fi and then come up with an idea. It was I was getting tired of it, and I had a seed in the back of my head, and so then I gravitated towards that one. I feel like I'm always developing. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, Annie, but I always have a couple ideas in my head, and when I'm moving to a new genre, it's usually because I'm tired of one, and then that idea excites me the most in that moment, and so that's the one I end up pursuing.
Yeah. I feel like, I mean, I wish I could even say it was that organized. I have, like, a massive file of just, like, abandoned ideas and some that, like, get a little bit further than that. So it's usually around, like, 5,000 words that I'll give it its own Scrivener document and around, like, 30,000 words that I know if it has legs or not.
Yes, I would agree with that. Yeah. Because sometimes you peter out. Right. I usually like get to about like 20K and know if it's going to go
I can write the first scene on just about anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
yeah.
Like not more than that. But I think, you know, a lot of them are just like cooking. I just have the biggest, you know, writer kitchen ever. Mm-hmm. And they're all just sort of simmering there. And then when I have like a low season, when I'm not working on anything, I kind of cycle back through a lot of these ideas and I'm trying to figure out if I've unlocked the key to any of them. And some I fight a lot harder for that. I have a book that's on submission right now that I fought for like, I mean, I think I spent about 8 years learning how to write contemporary. And then another 3 years trying to write this actual book until I finally came to a draft that worked. And, like, it, when it worked, you could say that I wrote this book in 8 weeks around a full-time job, right? Wow. Like, I would just get home from work and write it in, like, 2 hours before I went to bed. And I'd write 1,500 words and be like, what just happened? I think I blacked out. So, yes, on the one hand, you could say, like, oh, my God, I wrote that book so quickly.
You
but
didn't.
It was, like, it was years of trying to figure out how to write that book. And then it clicked.
Yeah. I have found that too. Like all of a sudden things finally click and then doesn't mean the draft is easy, but it just comes out better. Mm-hmm. I always feel like you just have to write what you're most excited about because you're going to be working on the book. If it turns into a book that actually has legs and it's going to go somewhere, you're going to be working on it for a couple years, probably still reading it hundreds of times. You might as well go with the stuff that you're most inspired
like,
and excited about.
I feel like being almost 10 years into this business, as both of us are, you know, you really find that everybody else will hate your book at some point. You've really got to figure out how to love it. And if you can't, don't bother. Just,
if you don't love it, the readers are going to see it on
if
the page.
You don't love
They're going to know.
Why bring that into your life? You know what I mean? It's not for fame, money, or glory. So
I don't think anyone does this for the money.
No. So
we do it because we love it.
Yes. Yeah. And occasionally we need it to love us back.
We do.
On those notes, do you have favorite genres that you like to read?
I read very widely, which is probably why I write pretty widely and I'm comfortable jumping between all of these genres. There are certain elements in books that I like to say are like my thing. And so if a book has, I still love, I know like post-apocalyptic is kind of dead in YA right now, but everything comes full circle.
She's using a lot of air quotes.
Yeah, sorry. Well, I'm putting it all in air quotes because I feel like publishing is an industry. I get why they do this. Everything has a box because that helps them market it. But so, like, I have a project that I've been working on that it's not true post-apocalyptic, but I know that's how it will get categorized, and that's a dead genre right now, so it seems like a risky project. But so I just love, I love survival stories. I love when the setting or the landscape is an obstacle to characters. I love morally gray characters. I love very fast pacing. I get bored very easily, so I like tightly plotted. So like all of those things together make it like an Aaron book. And I get into trouble though because I will auto buy a book for that, and some of them are awesome and then some of them you get burned on. But I read widely, and not just in YA, adults. I read middle grade sometimes too. I even like nonfiction sometimes, so everything. Yeah.
I think I'm similar that there are definitely, like, tropes or pieces in a plot description that I'm like, ooh, I love the, like, hate to love thing.
Oh, that's my favorite.
I mean,
trash for that.
Both, like, hate to love in terms of, like, transition, right? They first hated, then they loved. But also, the people I hate to love, you know what I mean? Like, like, love those. I love me an unreliable narrator. I love me a really awesome villainous creep. I like, there's definitely a lot of things that I'll read. Like, I really love romance. Like, straight up
any like a classic romance.
I'm so into, you know, just the idea of the romance genre, because this is literally a multi-billion dollar platform where the woman always wins, the woman's needs come first, and I'm just like, I am so into that. And it's written primarily by women. Women succeed at it. And I'm just like, the romance genre is one of the most feminist things we have out there right now. And I just want to put all my money towards it. and it doesn't hurt that, you know, these women are killing it. It's just awesome. But I love contemporary. I have auto by authors.
So we basically both read everything.
Yeah, everything.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Do you have any recent books that you are recommending? Anything you really, really loved recently?
I really loved Pride by Evie Zaboy. I thought that was awesome because I was obsessed with American Street. I really loved Fairyborn and Kingsbane. I cannot wait for the final book in that series.
But that's Claire LeGrand, right?
Yep, Claire LeGrand. And talk about like a villain that's...
I haven't read those ones yet.
Yes. Love him. Love them all. Love all of them. Like, there's just...
I love a villain.
And it's really cool, because for those that don't know that series, it follows two different women separated by 1,000 years, and they're two very different definitions of what it means to hold these powers. But they have the same type of power, and it's very cool, the juxtaposition of that.
For me, recently read, I read Damsel by Elena K. Arnold, and that was awesome. Like, super
I have not
weird.
Read it, but everybody has been raving about that to me.
I can
I
see why it's not
it.
For everyone, but I think it's like a very dark, it has like a classic fairy tale feel, but it's super feminist, and I loved it.
That's awesome.
I loved it. It's about a girl, a damsel, who basically gets rescued by a prince and then taken back to his kingdom, and then you start realizing that maybe there's some secrets being kept, and that one was really good. And then, the other ones I liked recently were The Poet X Elizabeth Acevedo. I think that's how you say her last name.
I also listened to that on audiobook, and it was
she
excellent.
Narrates that too, I think, doesn't she?
Is that her?
I didn't even know that. I'm pretty sure. Don't quote me on it. We'll fact check that.
She narrated Pride.
Loved Pride. I also listened to that on audiobook, so loved it. Yeah, so apparently Elizabeth Acevedo also narrated Evie Zaboy's Pride.
Look at that.
Amazing. Awesome.
Yeah, so that's what I've got off the top of my head.
Poet X, so good.
It's a good one, yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you both so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, this is very cool.
Everyone go buy all of their books.
All of them.
All of them. And give them to your friends as gifts and buy many, many copies.
And if you can, we recommend buying them from Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, New Hampshire.
Yeah, and if you buy one of mine, I can come sign it for you. This is Erin, because I'm
true.
Local. So,
true.
This is Annie. I'm not.
But she just signed a bunch of stock here.
Yeah,
so
you
we'll
should just
stuff.
Buy them anyway. It's fine. Awesome. I also, you know, I support unsigned books also.
Just buy all the books.
Buy all the books.
Awesome.
Thanks again to Erin and Annie for sitting down with me. Their books are on our shelves now. So as always, we have a ton of events coming up, so I'm just going to highlight a couple of them. First, I want to talk about this Friday, August 2nd at 6 p.m. We've got author Kate Allen coming to present her youth fiction book, The Line Tender. It's a tender and smart book about a tween girl dealing with grief on the edge of growing up. Funny, poignant, and deeply moving, The Line Tender is a story of nature's enduring mystery and a girl determined to find meaning and connection within it. Several of our booksellers have read this book and love it, so definitely come check that out. Hillary, we've got Pickapalooza coming up, right?
Pickapalooza. This is when we pick our books for our next book club for 2019 through 2020. And it's a lot of fun. It's August 5th at 5:30. There will be pizza. Mm. And there will be lots of arguing.
And debating. Yeah.
Everybody shows up with a pile of books that they're interested in possibly reading. And we put them in a big pile in the center. And we talk about what each of them is, and then we vote. And if you are interested in joining a book club, you don't have to come to every meeting at all. You can come to just the meetings where you're interested in reading the books. We have a lot of fun in our book clubs. We always have pizza. We always give away advanced reader copies, which is a great reason to come. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of nice people who show up at these. They're from 5:30 till usually 6:45 to give people time to do some book shopping. And they're usually Monday nights, the first Monday of the month, with the exception of holidays. If there's a Monday holiday, it gets moved to the next week. So I encourage people to show up and help us pick books, and by all means, bring your own suggestions. Mm-hmm. We especially are trying to find some good comic novels this year, because we always tend to get a little heavy duty. But fiction, nonfiction, we try to keep it to about 350 pages, so not super long. And we tend to look for more literary stuff as opposed to super popular, easy-to-read things. We like to challenge people a little bit. Mm-hmm. So hope we'll see you there.
Yes. And then one more time, I just want to highlight the Richard Russo event, which is August 27th at 6 p.m. And again, that's his first standalone novel in a decade, actually. Mm-hmm. Chances are. So definitely put that on your calendars. That's just a few of our many, many coming events, so definitely check our website, gibsonsbookstore.com, to see all of those. Check our calendar. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website, again, is gibsonsbookstore.com, and we're also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and we'll put those links in the show notes along with all of the books we talked about today. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks.
Bye.
Bye.